Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll get right to Adam Gopnik, New Yorker staff writer, on his three kinds of people when it comes to our attitudes about the internet, the never betters, the better nevers, or the always wuzzers. We'll see which one you are. Now, Adam Gopnik from The New Yorker is here in a sweeping review of books about the internet. He identifies three kinds of people regarding our attitudes toward the web. He calls them the never betters, the better nevers, and the ever wuzzers. We'll see which one you are. Hi, Adam. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. How are you? Thank you for having me. And let me win sincere brownie points by saying that as soon as we're done, I'm going to go online and pledge my pledge for the year.
Sincere brownie. That's all right. You get to do the segment no matter what. So, no, but I'm so glad you wrote this article, because if you didn't, I would have had to do it myself. And and you did it a much better job than I would. I was just saying to my producer the other week that there's been this rash of what I call internet fright books.
Yes.
You know, the internet is making us stupid. The internet is going to destroy your brain. The internet is going to tear your family apart. The internet is a tool of dictators. The internet is causing political polarization in America. I don't believe a quarter of it personally, but I said someone should write one of those big New York Review of Books pieces that reviews 9 internet fright books all rolled into one thesis. And 2 days later, she came back to me and said, Adam Gopnik wrote your article in The New Yorker.
Well, you see, you come to The New Yorker instead of The New York Review of Books for those
exactly.
kinds of pieces.
So your thesis is even broader than mine would have been. You take to task both the internet fright book authors, who you call the better nevers, like better that there never was an internet, and the internet cheerleaders, who you call the never betters.
Yes, indeed.
So tell our listeners what those two names mean.
Well, the never betters in my scheme are the people who tell you that the internet and the digital revolution, or whatever this week's name for it has brought us to the brink of a new utopia where all information, the news will be made from the bottom up, everything will be democratized, cookies will bake themselves, and the world will be a more nearly perfect place. And the criticism I have of those kinds of folks is to point out that this is something that when they look at the history of technology, they'll point to something like the invention of the printing press and say, you see how much the printing press revolutionized information, which is true, but what they don't always point out is that it revolutionized it in both ways. You know, Martin Luther got his theology out through the printing press, but he also got his anti-Semitism out through the printing press. The better nevers are what you call the internet fright authors. They're the people who say that the internet, the digital revolution, whatever we're calling it, has broken our attention span, ruined our inner meditative spaces, cocooned us in these little online communities where we never are aware of any other view, any view that dissents or differs from our own. And then finally, my last group were the ever-wuzzers. Those are people, and they've been writing books now more recently, who point out accurately that at any moment in the history of modernity, in the history of modern times, there's some new technology, whether it is the printing press or it is the radio or movies or television, whatever it is, that everybody says is utterly destroying our humanity. And we all are in a fright about it. And then that passes, we adjust to it, and something new comes along.
And I love your coining of this term, ever-wuzzers, and I guess this is probably where you are, too, judging from your article, or the closest to your own thoughts. So give us a little more on this, that throughout history, as you say, some machine, I love the way you put this, that throughout history, some machine is always showing us the mind. Some entertainment derived from the machine is always showing us non-mind.
Yeah, well, you know, if you read, for instance, books from the beginning of the 19th century, at a time when they were going through a kind of information revolution of their own, what everybody says is that this is great, except the novel. The novel is an incredibly destructive thing. In Jane Austen, she has to defend the novel because everyone says it's ruining the minds of our children. You and I are old enough to remember when people were saying exactly the same thing about television.
Sure.
You remember that?
I do.
People said that TV was this horrible thing that was destroying our minds, replacing our literary consciousness with this kind of dull, drugged, passive visual notion. And now, of course, if you look at it, in all of the Internet Fright books and all of the Better Never books, I get tripped up in my own terminology, people sort of celebrate television because television is like a common hearth. I have actually found myself, Brian, saying to my 16-year-old son, please get off your damn computer and come watch television with the rest of the family.
Well, and you tell the story of one of the Better Never authors, your terms are too close to each other, that's the problem, who makes a deal that is better than the Internet was never invented, who makes a deal with his kids for unplugged Sunday.
Right.
But it doesn't include television. So the web and the Xbox and the DS are off limits, but you can watch TV. And there's more than a little historical irony to that.
There's more than a little historical irony. There's enormous historical irony because, again, that's exactly in the 70s and 80s. That's what people were saying was destroying us. And yet I know exactly what he's referring to,
sure.
We do the same thing. We
sure.
say, get off your computer,
right.
Come, we'll all watch the new Sherlock Holmes, or we'll watch Entourage,
right.
or whatever it is.
And I do it, too, with my 13-year-old, same way.
Right. So we understand it, and we know it's right. You know, my own feeling about it is, because people have kept asking me since this essay came out, where do you stand on this? And the truth is I tend to go through a kind of sundial-like transformation every day. This time of day, when I've had my coffee and the sun is shining, I'm a real ever-wuzzer. The world's always changing, humane values. Is always adjust. But in the middle of the night, as a father, I don't know if you feel this way, I become a bit of a better never. That is, I worry, as I think we all do, that a kid who's attached like by an umbilical cord to his computer or her computer is not a kid who is reading, not a kid who's getting lost in all of the imaginative worlds in which we might have gotten lost at their age. I don't think there are not real losses here. I do.
And I tend to be a promoter of the web. I would certainly say look around at what's happening in the Arab world right now, modern communication, web and post-web, by the way, mobile technology, are tools of popular rule, I'm convinced, even if dictators also use them in a backlash to try to track people down and arrest them and surveil their whereabouts and things like that. But of course, we also have these moments. But still, on television and how much we've changed, I can only think of the beginning of The Simpsons, where they all run home to be with the family, and they plop down on the couch to watch the tube and not talk to each other.
And when The Simpsons started, that was a hilarious image of of American reality,
yes.
That was what it was.
And now, that's exactly the point, is that intro is pre-internet. It's more than 20 years old, which shows how TV was perceived in terms of its impact on family togetherness when it was the dominant entertainment technology.
Yeah, no, that's what that meant when it first came out, was look at Bubis Americanus. They're addicted. They're mainlining on television instead of talking to each other. We look at it now, and it's, oh, look at the American family. They're gathered around the little cozy hearth of television. I do think
that's another great phrase, by the way. Is that yours, Bubis Americanus?
No, I think that's H.L. Mencken's,
oh.
Actually. I think, though, that one of the things that happens there is that we have to figure out how we feel about that. That is that a gain or a loss? The other thing is, of course, is, and I do think that this is true, just thinking about that, I mean, The Simpsons is not Charlie Chaplin. It wasn't that long ago. We really are living through a revolution. That I'm convinced of, that this thing that we're going through, whatever name we give it, is a big one. It's not just a small change in degree, in technological degree. It's a real change in kind. I think when people compare it to the printing revolution, that's not an exaggeration. This is big stuff.
Don't you think that it also makes your 16-year-old smarter?
I think it makes his presence extended. I'll tell you a true story. You know, I was having one of those father-to-teenager kinds of conversations the other day about being online, and he said, plaintively but passionately, listen, Dad, you're not aware. I'm in touch with the whole world this way. I am with, you know, people in Wales who I know from chat groups and in magic communities and so on. He likes to do magic. And I think that's true. You know, there's that beautiful thing, the Ocarina app, Brian. Do you know that at all?
No,
on the iPhone?
No.
Oh, it's one of the great kind of, it should be the talisman of our time.
Sounds like an ocarina?
It sounds like an ocarina, which is great. You know, you can blow on your iPhone and make it sound like an ocarina. But you press the little planet button on the app, and you can hear everyone all over the world who's playing the Ocarina app on their iPhone at that moment. I mean, truly, and it'll show you, somebody in Sri Lanka is playing their Ocarina, and you can hear them. You have this truly planetary fugue of electronic sounds, of electronic music. The degree of connectiveness that this gives our kids, that this gives this generation, is absolutely dazzling. But the question then comes back to, is connectiveness the same thing as understanding in depth? Aren't those different things?
So if television means something so different to us today, hearth and home when it meant disintegration 20 years ago, what do you think Facebook might mean 20 years from now?
Well, you know, we've already seen how rapidly these things change. It seems as though it was only yesterday, though I suppose it's about 5 years ago, when all people talked about was blogging, the blogging revolution, how that had democratized the information business, the news business, and so on. But if you think about it now, most of the kind of big blogs are getting consolidated into media institutions. I see my old friend Andrew Sullivan's blog is now going to be part of the Daily Beast. And there are fewer and fewer young bloggers, I gather, I'm told, and more tweeters. That's already taken place. So it's already turning around. And where it all ends, I don't know. The question we have to keep coming back to, though, is not so much about contraptions. It's about our credos. It's about what kinds of beliefs we have through the contraptions and in spite of the contraptions. And what I don't think we're seeing is a leveling out of debate. Our ideological disputes remain just as intense and alive, and our genuine intellectual differences remain as acute as they've ever been.
So you are indeed an ever-wuzzer. Adam Gopnik from The New Yorker, in his sweeping review of books about the Internet, he divides authors into three kinds regarding the web: the never-betters, the better-nevers, and the ever-wuzzers. Great conversation. Now go keep your promise.
All right. Shall do indeed, Brian.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Adam Gopnik from The New Yorker, Brian Lehrer on WNYC.